And good morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition, another episode of The Other Side of Midnight. That magical time between dusk and dawn where we just take a look, a good, hard, scientific look at the things that during daytime most people kind of ignore. And if you've been noticing what's going on in daytime lately, you'll notice that, as I've said many times now before on this show, those daytime activities are becoming blurry with the nighttime interests of the people that populate these airwaves at this time of the other side of midnight. I mean, just look at this. Again, I come back. This election. I mean, if you don't think this election is sci-fi, tonight we're going to talk about interstellar empires, clandestine activities to keep civilizations planet-bound. And in some cases, the data indicates that maybe we're looking at deliberate seditions to keep upstart primitive civilizations from ever even getting out of the cradle. There's a study kind of making the rounds. I'm not sure yet whether it's real or it's not, but it pretends to be, or it portends to be, an analysis of the Sloan Digital Survey, which is a multispectral survey of the entire sky by, I forget what institution. They use a telescope south of here in the Land of Enchantment. And they've got about 2.5 million stars in this catalog. And they've got spectra for all those stars. Well, this scientist some years ago, I think back in 2012, proposed that one way to find out if anybody was trying to send us signals would be to look through something like the Sloan Digital Survey and to see if the proper offsets in the spectral lines were being produced that could only be produced by artificial processes. And this researcher, whose name escapes me at the moment, I think he's Canadian. Anyway, it's easy to Google, you know, SETI search, spectra analysis. Out of 2.5 million stars in the Sloan Survey, this researcher, this astronomer, claims that about 230, give or take, qualify with remarkable properties in their spectra indicative of some kind of artificial signaling, artificial control of the light coming from the star, like a very, 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 very big laser. Really, just a laser operating on these wavelengths, producing very funny spectral lines in these this tiny, 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 tiny fraction of stars. Now, the stars that are weird in this survey, according to this paper, also kind of bracket the central stellar type that the Sun is, a G2-type star, kind of, you know, moderately yellowish. And the data indicates that these anomalies, these 234 stars that have anomalies, range from K-type stars, which are cooler and more orange than the Sun, to F9 stars that are very bright and bluish just before you get to the A-type, which are bright and blue. And it's that mid-range of so-called habitable stars with these anomalies superimposed upon them that make this a very interesting and juicy story. But there's the rest of the story, and that's going to involve my guest this morning. So when we come back on the other side here, we will do a little bit of prep, a little more background, and then we'll introduce our guest, because we're going to talk this morning about where is everybody and a new theory by Brian Cox, physicist out of England, that maybe there's nobody out there because they all up and went extinct. Gosh, you think he's been reading some of our stuff on the Type 2 civilization that remade this solar system and then just kind of went away? Among the topics of conversation this morning, light years from home, on the other side of midnight, my name is Richard C. Hoagland, and we shall return.
There's so much that we need to share. So send a smile and show you care.
And we are back on the other side of midnight to the dulcet, and I mean dulcet, tones of Bobby Bright. Let's listen to this. We haven't played this in a long time. Well, aside from last night.
You can hear what the universe is saying. Time for you to wander through the mansions in your mind. Nothing to lose. There's everything to find. Other side.
And if you do want to join the conversation here on the other side, there are several ways to do it. Very easy. You can call us on Skype, last half hour of the show, so I'll give you a heads up when we get down there. 505-796-8802. That's 505-796-8802. Or, of course, Enterprise Mission or The Other Side of Midnight. Now, you can also reach us with Facebook and Twitter. So you go to the homepage of this program, theothersideofmidnight.com, go to the upper left-hand corner. That's where, this is on computers, by the way. It's a little different on Androids and other devices, but, you know, kind of look around where the programming information is, and you'll see some links at the top to Facebook and Twitter, the familiar icons. Click on those. You can join the conversation that way. Send me a note, a question, a comment, a fact that we don't know. And we'll put you on the air, or we'll put them on the air. If you call us, we will put you on the air. Okay, my guest this morning is going to talk about some very big stuff. As you know, our research for 30-some years has centered on the idea that we are not the first, that all around us in this solar system, there are artifacts now of some extraordinary, absolutely phantasmagorical, Oz-like civilization, known in the trade as a Type II civilization, a civilization that can control the energies of its entire star. And something awful happened, and we are the inheritors of the ruins. Now, there's a lot of discussion about all kinds of other interstellar species that come poking around, looking at us, finding us, whatever. Some claim to have been involved with us. I mean, that's some of the things we're going to talk about tonight. Because this new study, this new set of comments by Brian Cox about we may be the only ones because all the others killed themselves, when you look around this solar system, particularly as we're going to do on Friday, when we're going to do our conversation with John Brandenburg, and then we're going to bring the imaging team on, and we're going to have each of the members of the team show him one stunning artifact from Mars, from the surface of Mars, that's from this ancient civilization. That's Saturday morning. Second hour, we're going to show John the data. First hour, he's going to show us data indicating there was this incredible catastrophic nuclear war. In fact, I think he's got it pinned down from the isotope data to two nuclear wars on Mars in the ancient past. So when you look at that data, and it's becoming inescapable now that what this solar system is not what the mainstream has been telling us. Against that backdrop, when someone, you know, sends you a few emails and calls you up and you have some conversations and they say, oh, by the way, I've kind of met some of the folks out there and things are not at all like you think they are, and we're kind of, you know, cattle. Maybe those other 234 stellar systems with the anomalous signals are also cattle kept in prison, sending their signals at the speed of light across the interstellar dark because they're kept from the really bad toys that would allow themselves to, tomorrow, blow themselves up. Paris Tosin is a digital publisher, rogue researcher, I like that, and an activist for interstellar cultures. In November of 2005, he was visited by three interdimensional people, and his life has never been the same. His friendship with the Stellans, star people, goes back more than 45 years. Paris's research interests include Gnosticism and Christianity, synthetic humans, Hollywood aliens, reality science, and interplanetary colonization. His most recognized discovery deals with three synthetic human politicians on Capitol Hill. Well, that should make for an interesting conversation. Paris is the author of numerous self-published books, including God is the DNA, Salvation, the Church, and the Molecular Biology of the Gnostics, and Parsons Artificial Simulacra at the Wheel of America. And we could go on and on, but you can read the rest of it on the Other Side of Midnight website under the guest page tonight. Welcome to the other side, Paris. Welcome back, I should say.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me back.
Why don't we start where people, because they may not have heard your story, why don't we begin with you? You represent that you have met some folks that are kind of not from here. They don't hang their hat down here. And they represent one or more cultures out there. And for some reason, they chose you to interact with. Kind of tell us that story.
It is a very strange story, and I would have never thought that this kind of thing could ever happen, especially in my life. But in 2005, when I was 38 years old, I had a rude awakening in my apartment building. This is Vancouver, British Columbia. This is the Western BC, Western Canada. I was visited by three beings from another dimension. Now, as crazy as it sounds, this is something that happened over three nights, and they interacted with me, they communicated with me. I could see them. They were in a cloaked position. They were quite tall. They were quite handsome, sharp-featured, and very human-looking.
How did this encounter begin? You're just kind of sitting around having a normal evening, watching television, or you come back from a late meeting, or you had a girlfriend living over. I mean, what was going on when they dropped in?
Well, there was no trigger from my side, because I was just online doing internet research, looking into alternative topics. And when I felt this wave, this shift of energy flowing into my room, which is just a bachelor suite, so it's just one room, and this energy flowed behind me. When I turned around, I saw a large portal in space and time. And stepping through the portal were three people, almost like as if out of a movie. But this wasn't the movie. I was awake. I was lucid. I have never done drugs in my entire life. Mm. So this was something that I saw. And there were three people. They stepped into my room right where I was sitting on my chair. And I stood up, and I was then communicating with three people. All I was thinking was, these people are from another dimension, and they wanted to talk with me.
Now, hang on. When they appeared in your room, what was your reaction? I mean, this is not something that happens to everybody else. So did you go, oh boy, they're real, or holy blankety blank, where's the door?
I was surprisingly calm, almost as if I had some familiarity with this situation, which is very hard to explain.
Like it may have happened before and you didn't remember, and when it happened now, you suddenly had this feeling that, hey, maybe this is not so weird after all.
Yes. After this beating and after I woke up, all my memory came back that I have had these visits before.
Oh.
So what they've done is they must have adjusted my memory so that this part of the memory remained flexible, so that when it would be always open to a future meeting. So I wouldn't react negatively. I wouldn't run and hide under the bed and open up a Bible, for example.
Okay.
So these people, now at the time I thought, well, they came from another dimension. And it's almost like a Bill Gates or an Elon Musk knocking on your door and saying, "Hey, Paris, how you doing? We're doing these great things with computers, and we're going to go into space." And I was thinking, "What's that got to do with me?" Because I think you have the wrong place.
No, wait a minute.
After
they appear, what did they communicate? Did they talk? Did they use telepathy? I mean, what happened?
They used these type of people, advanced people, they use a it's not a telepathy that I think in human terms, it's a telepathy where you can actually hear their voice very clearly in your head. Like it's almost like a crystal digital radio right in your head. It's very clear.
Okay.
So it's not a projected voice. It's like almost like you're in a live space right inside of your mind.
So it's like
and
you,
they communicate.
So wait. It's like you talking to yourself, except you know it's not you.
It's much sharper than that. It's almost like someone's standing right by your ear and speaking in a very clean, clear tongue. There's no mistake.
Okay, but as a separate identity.
Exactly. In their voice, if it's a woman or a man,
okay.
It's a completely different voice invading your mind.
And they spoke English, or you interpreted automatically their communication as English.
It was about a 20 minute conversation, I think, and this is 11 years ago. So it was about 20 minutes, but the first 19 minutes were in a different language. So this is the interesting part. Now, I'm familiar with this portal and these people entering my room, and then I'm familiar with this language, although I can't translate it. I do seem to understand it.
Okay.
And at the end of about 19 minutes, they realized that I couldn't translate it, so they did say something in plain English. And they said, "We are ETs, and we wish to communicate with you." Very clear. You know, the telepathy is like, imagine you put like a balloon, you put a glass bubble on your head, and then whatever happens in that glass bubble is the sound, and then another head enters that glass bubble, and it's just that you're sharing that space with another mind. So there's no mistake. I mean, I wouldn't even call it telepathy. It's just like mind-to-mind communication.
Okay.
It's very sharp. It's very
so
clear.
If these are interstellar beings and they know you're human and they know you don't know this language, why would they spend almost 20 minutes talking to you in a language you didn't know and then suddenly, whoops, you made a mistake, and then switch to English? That makes no sense at all.
Because a much more detailed discussion. I hope we can get into it.
Well, I know. Let's stop right there because, you know, people are going to gauge the rest of your model, the rest of your scenarios, on the basis of this encounter and the accuracy of your reporting of an unbelievable event. So details are important.
Right.
Let's not skip details because it's the basis of your whole credibility for the rest of the evening.
Well, imagine that this event, which I have tried to simplify, I suppose, contains within it a lot of answers and a lot of secrets that have to be decoded. And it has taken me years and years to actually decode what happened in those three visits from these three people. So, for example, why would they speak to me in an alien language if I'm not an alien? And then why would they communicate the basic message in English?
Mm-hmm.
So these are advanced people, and what they have to do is the advanced people have to recognize the advanced aspect of yourself and the human aspect of yourself. And it comes down to the fact that the star people, they have a program where a star being will incarnate as a human being, such that the human being has a star being soul. So when they communicated in this alien language, they were communicating to my star being.
Okay.
Which is inside the human being.
Let me get this straight. You're saying that Paris Tosin is actually an ET incarnated on Earth specifically to wait until such an appropriate time as he is activated to accomplish a mission, and these guys basically showed up to give you the Krell, I'm your father, Superman, briefing.
Right. They came in to say it's time for you to wake up and you need to go through that process because you need to do your mission.
Now, when they told
you
this.
Very specific. There's no action.
When they told you this, again, how did you feel about it? Because a lot of times, you know, we hear information and there's an electric reaction, particularly when it's shocking. You either know it's a lie, something happened to me, I won't go into it tonight, but I knew it was a lie, an incredibly complex, very powerful lie, but I knew. How did you respond to this information? Oh, by the way, Paris, you're not who you thought of all your life. You're actually somebody else, and it's now time to get off that damn couch and do something.
Well, I completely understood them at the star being level, but when they left, I reverted back to the human level, the human frequency, and I could not relate to what they told me. I could not understand. No one had ever explained that a star being would incarnate as a human being. I had never heard that in all my life.
Wait a minute, you never saw
it? So I had no way of understanding.
Wait, you never saw the movie Starman? That's a standard motif in science fiction and even in ufology, that aliens come here and they're called anchor babies. No, that's another kind of alien. I'm sorry. Mixing my metaphors here. Anyway, no, the concept of aliens incarnating on Earth is not, it's not that alien, Paris, but you had never encountered it, huh?
I would never have thought that I was one of them.
Ah, okay.
In fact, I didn't want to be one of them.
Oh.
So there's...
Well, how do they convince you? Wait. How do they convince you? If they only visited you three times, and they wasted most of the first visit talking to you in the wrong language, or is it kind of McLuhan-esque? Their process of communicating was as important to awakening your memories as the actual information.
You know, why they came three times is because the presence... A, I could not refute it. I could not dismiss it as a delusion or a hallucination.
Okay.
But B, it presented this the obligation. They made a concerted effort to visit me. So on a cultural level, right? If someone makes an effort to do something for you, you make an effort to reciprocate. So I felt an obligation to reciprocate at least to what they did, and to reconnect my communication system and to wake up, so that I could communicate with them. So it's an obligation. So because they made the effort, not because I owed them anything, not because I believed them. I did not believe them that I was a star being, because I didn't understand that. And I told them, I remember telling them telepathically, it's very nice of you to come here, but I don't understand. I think you have the wrong person. I wish you well. Mm-hmm. And but I can't help you. I've got nothing to do with this. I don't know anything about stars. I'm not an astronomer. I'm not an engineer. I'm an artist. So, you know, usually they find a scientist, an engineer, somebody who's smart, a mathematician. We need your help to solve the algorithm. Mm-hmm. You know, but I was the wrong person. So I had to go through a very difficult process of waking up, because I had no support. I had no real method of convincing me. And then I learned about star beings can incarnate as human beings. It's not a rare thing. It's not. It's happened thousands of times.
Let me stop you there. I mean, in a sense, then, aren't we all star beings? I mean, what makes someone porting a soul from Alpha Centauri into an incarnating fetus on this planet, as opposed to a fetus being incarnated from, you know, torsion field, the ether, wherever souls are when they're not here or somewhere else? In other words, what differentiates a star being as some kind of special incarnation?
Star beings are predicated on the level of knowledge and awareness. So certain star beings, a star being is recognized by their awareness and their knowledge. And they are, they, you are communicated at that level of your awareness and knowledge. And so you are approached at that awareness and knowledge. Now, there are many star beings who have incarnated here, but they have a lower level of awareness and knowledge. I had a higher awareness.
No. When you say lower, I mean, if you can't remember, isn't that as low as you can go? You mean when they're activated, they have different levels of expertise?
When they're... Right, right. Where they come from, the culture, their race of people has a certain level of advancement.
Okay.
Like these type 1, type 2, type 3 civilization.
So are we talking technical advancement or are we talking spiritual?
It depends on the culture. It can be a certain advantage.
I'll tell you what, why don't you hold it there? Skype is acting up. We're at the bottom of the hour. I'm going to try to reconnect so we have a better line. My guest this morning, Paris Tosin, and we're discussing Stellans, an interstellar culture which he was introduced to. Well, we'll get to the rest of the story because what he says that they told him is kind of important right now, I think, to pay attention to, along with everything else. You're on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland, and we shall return. And we are back on the other side of midnight, a gorgeous gibbous moon up there and a crystal clear land of enchantment sky. It's actually quite warm. Patrick, it's in the mid-50s, so it could be warm and gorgeous tomorrow. By the way, if you want to join the conversation, Facebook and Twitter, upper left-hand corner of our homepage, send me a note, send me a question, send me a point that I've forgotten, and we'll try to get it on the air. And, of course, at the bottom of the second hour, we're going to open the phone line, so you might want to mark down how to get hold of us by phone. 505-796-8802. 505-796-8802. Or on Skype, Enterprise Mission, or The Other Side of Midnight. So, Paris, we have a lot to go through and not much time to do it, so let's kind of compress this. You said these guys came to you three times. What happened on the third to A, make them stop, and B, did you kind of realize after that third visit, wait a minute, this is who I am?
By the next day, I decided that I need to look into this. So I imagine they picked that up. They received that message. And then I made effort.
So this was only after the first visit.
This is after the third visit.
Oh, so it did take three times. Now, was it spaced days apart or a few hours apart or weeks apart or whatever?
These visits?
Yeah.
These visits were 3 days in a row.
Interesting.
Three nights in a row, about 2 or 2:30 in the morning.
Sounds like a Christmas carol.
And each time was basically the same protocol. But the first time when they caught me by surprise, and I didn't overreact.
That's an understatement.
And I saw them. I saw them leave. The second time, as soon as I felt the shift in the energy, I turned my chair, and I saw the portal open up. Rather before, because I kind of thought, well, maybe there wasn't
okay,
a portal that opened.
Describe what this portal looked like. We've all seen, wormholes on television. We've seen the sliders, vortex, and all that. What does a real portal between dimensions, when it opens up in your room, look like? What does it feel like? Is it cold? Is it hot? Is there rushing air? Is it like somebody opened a door, didn't close a window? I mean, what physically happens when you open a portal in your living room?
Well, I can name some of the things that happened. The game changed dramatically, almost to the dance floor. But these were not visions. So you could feel the shift. You can see the blinking lights and the shining lights and the electroluminescence, and you can feel the effervescent energy in the room. It was palpable. The floor became filled with an energy mist. It looked like a mist, but it was actually like a dense energy mm-hmm. that kind of went up almost to my knees when I stood up, and it was tingling. So you had this very surreal lighting, and you had this energy, and the portal itself was like a whitish, like almost like a window frame, not perfectly rectangular, but kind of like jagged, like a
wait a minute,
almost like that in that Star Trek. Remember that Star Trek episode, they go back in time.
Oh, City on the Edge of Forever.
Yeah, there's that portal.
The Guardian of Forever has this big kind of ovalish window.
But it's kind of jaggedy.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
It's kind of irregular. So imagine you stretch that to a rectangular form. And it's basically like that. And it was all kind of sparkly and light. The frame was whitish and the energy was grayish, gray and white, if I recall. And these people, they were cloaked. Again, I could not use this term 11 years ago. I can use the term now. But they were cloaked, and underneath their energy cloak, they wore clothes. They were finely dressed, almost like barons. Almost like the 15th century barons, like, you know, they were, and they, it turns out that these were not star beings. Actually, these people came from the inner earth, what I call the elves.
The elves?
So these, I did not meet.
How tall were these beings? Because elves are supposed to be kind of short and small, right?
No, these are the elves from like Lord of the Ring elves, like tall.
Okay, all right.
They were about
and you say they're from inside this planet.
Now, at the time, I did not know this, but after many years of research and understanding, they came from inside the planet, and I call them elves.
Okay. Now, why were they chosen to be the intermediaries?
Because the elves are sort of have become sort of the caretakers of the earth. So the elves are less advanced than the star beings. So again, it's hierarchy of knowledge and advancement. So the star beings, the protocol is you contact the elves, and then the elves go out to contact me. Because I was not in a position to make contact with star beings, they're far too advanced.
Is this about, hang on, is this about matching frequencies and energy levels and all that?
It's that, but it's also the shock of waking up and the ability to communicate and to have a reasonable discussion. It just wouldn't work. The star beings are far too advanced.
Okay.
And it would be a useless conversation.
Okay.
It's like me speaking to a five-year-old. It wouldn't be much to talk about. So the elves are the caretaker. The elves are very old. They're very advanced. And they live inside the earth.
Okay, let me stop you there again.
And
when you say inside the earth, are we talking under certain continents? Are we talking subterranean facilities, under human facilities? Are we talking under the ocean? I mean, how extensive is there a civilization living subterranean inside this planet?
The under continents, under nations, subterranean cities.
And how many of them are there?
I don't know. Thousands.
Okay. And how do they remain undetectable? I mean, we're doing all kinds of seismic things and probing and tomography and satellites that are using, you know, end fire, you know, radio systems, very long frequency. How have these guys remained invisible?
The elves are technologically advanced, and they're very magical. So they can use holographic technology to hide portals and openings, to change the shape. They can add a mountain from a, with a hologram.
So when
hologram
you,
looks real.
When you say magical, we're talking Arthur Clarke magic, right? Any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. So you're basically saying that with their super science and super technology, they can remain on this planet under our feet, literally, and we don't know they're there?
Absolutely, yes.
Does anybody,
I didn't know they were there.
Does anybody on the planet, like government, military, DOD, you know, international agencies, does anybody know?
Yes.
And how do they?
The cabal groups.
Okay, the cabal, the guys who run the world. Okay, we will get to the cabal shortly. Okay, so on this third visit, after the third visit, three nights running,
okay,
you finally get to the point where, well, maybe I should kind of Google this, right?
Right. Then I say maybe, you know, because to pursue what they've asked me to do, I have to change all my plans. I have to change basically who I am.
Huh.
It's a big shift.
You really do have a kind of an inclination to understatement, Paris. Change all your plans. You find you're a star being. You're living in this incredibly primitive culture. And they tell you to do what? And you think you may have to change your plans? I think that's right.
So I didn't want to do it. I was, but there's no reason to do it other than I feel obligated because they came to see me and I, you know, I feel I should at least finish the conversation. That's it. That's
okay.
All I had. Because there's no logic. There's no way you can find it. I've never heard about it. The people from inside the earth, and I've never read a story about portals opening up in real life. So I had to basically detour my life, and I went out to find a psychic intuitive woman she was a Taiwanese Tibetan Buddhist, actually, it turned out.
My gosh.
And
How did you meet? Why did you go looking for a psychic? Did you say
a psychic intuitive?
And you specifically, after meeting these guys, said I've got to go find a psychic intuitive. Why?
I said, well, after meeting these guys, I said, how in heck am I going to fix this communication situation so that I can communicate with these people? Now, I was at a health food store, and there was a brochure stuck on the bulletin board, and it said psychic intuitive. And she was Chinese. I had a strong sort of liking for Chinese things, so that immediately attracted me because maybe that they could understand. And when I reached out to her, she said, you know, basically, I don't deal with ETs and, you know, good luck.
Okay.
She told me to go away. But, you know, my intuition or my spirit guides, because, you know, I was reading a lot of stuff now. I'm trying to figure this out. And people say, well, you have spirit guides. I didn't know I had spirit guides. So my spirit guides and my intuition says, okay, let's ask this lady about doing an energy healing, and it turned out she had this ability to do an energy healing, but she's never advertised it, and she'd only done it in her immediate family, but I knew about it, and so she said, come in, $100, and it'll be about an hour. Now, again, I'm changing my life. It's $100 to do this thing. I only have about $110 for the month.
Hmm.
And that's got to include my food. So basically, that's all my food money and or transportation.
So this is a non-trivial decision.
This is a very big commitment on my part. at a very big cost, and the only thing I have now is my intuition saying this is your new direction. But something happens in a man's life at age 35. Things start to degrade, and your aspirations start to change, and you become a little bit more spiritual. And by 38 or 39, there's a spiritual event in your life. Sometimes it's an accident. Sometimes it's a very brutal divorce. In my case, it's these people coming through a portal in my room. So we all have a spiritual event in our late 30s. And mine in particular happened to be...
Yours was a Lulu. Okay, so we need to move along here because... I mean, I'm getting the feeling, the thing I wanted to check out from my own, you know, intuition here is, did this really happen to you? And I'm getting this feeling it really happened because it's got all the earmarks of things that really happened because they're not neat, they're not circumscribed, they're not predictable, they're basically messy. So this was a messy encounter, right. and it inspired you to have to reach out. In other words, it was not given to you. You even had to make the decision, I'm going to figure out this damn language, because that seems to me, again, as an analyst, apart from this, to be part of the testing. Is this guy, A, is he the right guy? B, is he a guy that's properly motivated? B, can we get him to remember who he really used to be and get off the couch and get on with his mission? So what did they tell you your mission was?
So then I had to go through the King process, which no longer involved the elves. It involved being, after meeting with the woman, I woke up and went through three or four of an awakening, of an intense spiritual awakening, which I documented. It was so crazy. And then that's where I met the star beings.
Right? Themselves, not the elves, not the ambassadors, but the real guys, the guys in control.
The real guys. I started to meet these star beings. They were different kinds. They were human-looking ones.
Hang on. What was your first meeting? You know, this is supposed to be a big deal, right? You can't be in their field. They know too much. You wouldn't have anything in common. It's like talking to an ant. How did you wind up talking to a star being directly?
Well, the first star beings were these six gray-skinned beings. Short. These are the short, maybe 3 or 4 feet tall, gray-skinned beings. Six of them, and they communicate by a different telepathy. They have a different telepathy, but they communicate very fast. And they started to tell me things about my past life, about my future life. I mean, it's just an overload of information.
But they are definitely they're definitely alien. They're not like the other guys. And they're trying to download a whole bunch of stuff too fast for you to basically receive it.
Right. So now you want the answers. They have all the answers, but you can't process it. Because every time they say something, I don't understand it. I have to research. I have to figure it out. And to them, it's just common knowledge. It's just basic information. For me, I have no understanding. There's no schema, right? I have no way of understanding what they're talking about.
I guess I'm kind of trying to understand here. Hang on, Paris. I'm trying to understand, if these guys are so advanced, wouldn't they know in your human terrestrial incarnation you would not be? So they would have the proper protocol, so they wouldn't shock you, scare you, overload you. In other words, it seems kind of catch as catch can.
I think maybe... we watch too many movies, because the movies, everything is, all the scenes are specifically designed by a screenwriter to slowly evolve the character, to go through all the difficulties and the challenges until they come to the final climax and they say, hey, I'm here.
Right.
But in real life, it's messy.
Why?
In real life, it's messy.
Why? What's the urgency? It sounds to me like an emergency. The only time things go awry.
Right, there is an emergency.
See, look, we pattern these encounters, these stories of these encounters, after human institutions, right? You know, storms, Red Cross, doctors, people trying to care for other people, military, invasion, trying to, you know, throw up dictators and save populations and that kind of thing. In other words, we all have these stereotypes. It sounds to me like these guys are from, I don't know, almost the Smothers Brothers. I mean, it really sounds very amateurish.
They operate at a much higher frequency. So when you interact with them at their frequency, everything is fine. But I was at a very low frequency, and they are at a very high frequency. So there's too much information, and I can't process it. So I'm on a dial-up modem, and they're on broadband.
Okay, all right.
You know, they have LTE. You know. So I'm using a 2G phone, and they've got 4G LTE mobile telecom systems.
That's
I cannot process all their data.
Okay, again, time is flitting. How long did it take before you made sense of what was going on?
Then it took about a year to meet. I met all kinds of star beings. I met the cabal. I was attacked by the cabal because they don't like.
Well, wait, let's not get into the cabal stuff yet. Let's talk about you interacting with these folks. Did they at this year long process? Did they kind of debrief you and tell you this is why you're here?
No, they don't do that. They do point you in the right direction. And a lot of the stuff you already know, it's inside of you. It's just a matter of you decoding it and opening up those memories, those implants. You know, when we're born, they put in these thought implants, and sometimes these blocks, they hobble. A lot of times they hobble a person. So before you're born, they put all these blocks in your system. So you cannot access this information.
Why?
You cannot access who you are.
Why?
So you can live a human life. You can experience a painful suffering. You can live like a human. You can fall in love, and you can make money, and you can have sex. Because if you are fully awake, you don't want any of those things.
So why are we here?
So they hobble you.
No. Why are we here?
I mean,
if this is a free will scenario, why are you here? In other words, if you don't have a mission, if you're not here to basically save the planet, why would you go through this human experience, which, frankly, if they have to cut off the memories of all the thing you used to be, sounds like a real step down in life, in existence. Why would a conscious being do that?
Right. That is protocol. You have to understand your environment. You have to understand the culture you're dealing with. The human culture is very different from star culture.
Okay, I guess I'm trying to get to the idea, are you an agent, a sleeper agent, we would call it in the East-West vernacular, designed to be activated at a particular time, who chose to incarnate and have all those memories erased so you couldn't do your job if you knew who you really were until the right time? In other words, is this a plan by these star beings to, what, change the destiny of the human race, change the destiny of individuals in the human race, change the destiny of the planet, to do what? Why did they activate you? Why are there so many others like you here that don't know they're like you, and why are you here?
Well, we can add a few more. The thing is, you are in charge of your incarnation. Whatever blocks you have, those are blocks you requested prior. They did not enforce any blocks in my life. I stipulated exactly what I wanted, where I was born, how I would grow. It was my choosing.
Okay. Now, did they show you this? Did you remember this? Or did they tell you this?
That's most people. I had my exact incarnation. Yeah. I was waking up. Because in the beginning, you're kind of like what you're saying. You're kind of upset. What do you want from me? What am I here for? Please tell me, you know. Send Jesus down to tell me who I am, to tell me what I'm supposed to do, and then I'll do it. And that is the complete opposite. That's the complete reverse of the truth. The truth is, you chose your incarnation. You chose to be hobbled the way you are. You chose your exact life circumstance. And now when you wake up, you have to realize that it's your doing. It's your fault. Hmm. Your life is your fault.
It's so interesting, Pierce.
And then you take responsibility.
Hang on. You choose the term hobbled. Donald Trump this afternoon announced in a tweet, of course that's the medium of choice these days, that he was no longer shackled. Shackled right. And hobbled are the same thing. In other words, exactly. Is it possible that Donald Trump is a star being that's kind of come to the realization, oh my God, this whole thing is a farce?
Or is it possible that Donald Trump was woken up last year and his mission was to run for president, and he had to go through the battling of the system in order to prove that the system was no longer functioning, and then he had the ability to break through that?
Basically.
Because otherwise he did not.
To totally reform the system. Okay, we're basically on the same page, and we got about a couple of minutes to the top of the hour. When we come back, I want to go through some of the points that you sent, because they're very interesting things. People, again, if you take this idea seriously, it leads to certain implications. So when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the implications. And we also don't want to forget our friends over on Facebook. You know, if you go over to Facebook and you actually start typing, you'll be amazed at the people you're going to find. I mean, there's really cool people over there. I know, because they take some of their best stuff and sends it over here. So go to Facebook and Twitter, get to know some folks, get to ask some questions. Kind of, you know, you could even gang up on us. You could all kind of collaborate in one big question. See if you can get behind the facade of the morning that we're discussing. Anyway, you're on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland, and we shall return.
Just the basic facts. Can you show me where it hurts? There is no pain you are receding. The distant ship's smoke on the horizon. You are only coming through in waves. Your lips move, but I can't hear what you say. When I was a child, I had a fever. My hands
And we are back on the other side of midnight on this crispy, although it's a kind of, you know, warm out there. It's going to get chillier as the weeks progress. My guest this morning, Paris Tosin, and we're talking about an interstellar contact, a group of beings who come and present themselves in his room through a wormhole, through a portal, through some kind of vortex. And they basically say, Paris, it's time, wake up. This is your mission. So we got to collapse a lot of things here in time. Once you kind of got centered and realized this was for real, and you did have a mission, what did you start to do? In other words, obviously you need to put your mission in context. That means you need to find out what's really going on in the weird, messed up geopolitics of the planet, and that's when a term, the cabal, surfaces, right?
That's right. Right, the cabal. So the cabal, I had never heard of the cabal, and I had no idea that they even existed. But it turns out they do exist, and it turns out that the cabal made signed agreements in the early 60s with these Stellan groups, these Stellan councils. And they, in those detailed agreements, they would receive a number of scientific and technological assistance from these star beings. In exchange, the star beings wanted to basically service the planet, which they look at as a live being, and it needs to be maintained. And they also wanted to connect with star beings who incarnated as humans.
So they wanted these two things, the star beings. And the cabal said, listen, we will let you do those things, but what we want a few things from you. For example, we want detailed energy workings of your ships and devices. B, we don't want you to come too low so that people will see you. So we want to restrict you how close you orbit our planet. We want to know your energy physics. We want to know about anti-gravity. We want to know about genetics. We'd also like some samples of your star being genetics just for our study. And we want to know who in their previous life was a star being and is now a human, both in the past and in the future. You see, the cabal, they took all this technology and ideas as part of an exchange, an agreement, and they also took the information who is a star being in human form now and in the future, who will incarnate as a human. So they took all these...
Paris, hang on. Let me stop you there. We're at 3 minutes after the hour. We only got a couple more minutes before the break. Let me raise an interesting point.
Okay.
Whitley Strieber and I have had some conversations along these lines, and it turns out that in our pre-public lives, we both had visits from government and high-level, shall we say, representatives from Earth, on Earth, here, at a time in our careers where no one should have taken the time to single us out and to give us this information and to spend that kind of quality time. We were started comparing notes one night, and I said, it's almost like they have a time machine, whoever they are that run the planet, and they knew these various people are going to become important in terms of their plan, so they intervene earlier. At least that's what I was kind of looking at in terms of my situation, and then Whitley independently said, well, that's kind of the same with me. So is that actually what is going on? Because they wanted the lineage of the star beings reincarnated so they could keep tabs on them if they ever became troublemakers.
Exactly.
Okay, hold it there.
That's what they did.
We're five after the hour.
Exactly.
My guest this morning, Paris Tosin. Sometimes one-word answers are shatteringly important. You're on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland, and we shall return.
I saw a girl today look just like you.
Ah, yes, the Electric Light Orchestra. Turn to stone. Okay, so let's go to the cabal. When did you discover... Oh, before we get to that, let me ask this question. How many people are star beings that don't know it? I mean, when I went through that little set of scenarios, you seemed to acknowledge that maybe myself and Whitley could be kind of in the same category. Except I have zero memories of anything to do with anything that you've been describing. Go ahead.
Well, that was all part of the cabal plan. The cabal plan was to identify the star being incarnates and to interrupt their life, to redirect the course of their life, and to completely compromise their mission, to get them off mission. Whether they use the my lab, the Mary lab, to do a fake alien abduction, to gang rape them, drug them, brainwash them, and to blame it on evil aliens, in quotes, or whether they did psychological abuse, whether they took out the future activists, they reprogrammed them, they brainwashed them, they wiped out their memories, or they ruined the lives of UFO researchers. They did this all on purpose so that the star being incarnates did not wake up as they were supposed to, and they do not know that they were star beings incarnating as humans, because those specifically came here with a mission. And if they fulfilled their mission, the cabal would no longer be in operation. Now, the star being said, listen, okay, they see the future. They say, well, the cabal is going to do a lot of bad things, fascism, Nazism, imperialism. They're going to go to war. The star being says, you know, we don't want you to do that. The cabal are very deceptive. The cabal are very smart. They said, you are too advanced, and we are a primitive culture. You know, they're on their knees asking for forgiveness. Please do not interfere with our planet so that we may evolve properly. And the star beings, because there's a protocol, you can't interfere on a lesser developed civilization. Mm-hmm. They had to follow the protocol. And so they watched the cabal basically ruin the Earth.
Wait a minute. Your Skype totally broke up then.
They
watched the cabal do what?
So they watched the cabal basically ruin the Earth to disparity, to plunge everyone into chaos. And they had a choice because they had all the protocol. Now, one way to circumvent that protocol is for a star being to incarnate as a human being. And then they can act in society in any way that is possible. There's no more interference protocol. There's no more prime directive because you're a human. But the cabal control information. The cabal do vaccinations. The cabal control propaganda. They come to you at night and they wipe your memories. They change your program. They they put in more blocks in your memory.
No, hang on. Paris, hang on. There's 7 billion people on the planet. How many would you say are stellar agents planted as sleepers for this time to awaken and rescue the human race? I guess that's basically what the mission is, right?
Well, it's not really to rescue the human race. It's just to carry out their mission. Mission.
What is their mission then? If their mission is not to help their fellow human beings not be enslaved by, you know, tin-plated delusions of dictatorship, to quote a Scottyism, why are they here? What is their mission? Or is it, as Gene Roddenberry said to me, it's basically just to come down and have one hell of a time and then come back and have another hell of a time? In other words, is their mission just to experience?
No, the star being is different. They have a mission. The mission might be to start a chain of health food shops.
Why?
The mission might
Why?
Be to
Why?
Become an
Why?
Activist. The mission...
Can't human beings do this for themselves? This is really beginning to make no sense. I mean, if you have a mission... If you're parachuting in from an interstellar culture and your memories are carefully, you know, masked and muffled so you don't remember who you are, and you don't blow your cover, and then somebody shows up from that civilization and says, it's time. Sounds to me like it's time to do something in concert with a whole bunch of other agents. What is the mission they're designed to do? And it's not to open up a chain of beauty parlors unless that's part of the mission.
A chain of health food shops is to create better eating habits. Not everybody, there's a misconception that you come here to save the world, and that is completely false. You're not here to save the world, you're here to do your mission. Your mission, you might become an activist, you might become a writer, you might go on television, you might become a celebrity, you might open up a franchise of restaurants. You might have opened up a Starbucks chain, which is thousands of coffee shops. It's not about the coffee, but in those coffee shops, people can go and meet other people and further business transactions. Everything that happens multiplies the veracity of this reality of existence, and that changes the vibration of existence. If everybody's fulfilling their purpose and reducing their karmic debt, it changes the vibration of the earth and it raises the frequency of everybody. The raising of the frequency diminishes the cabal. You know, it's a much more advanced approach rather than going out there to be a hero and save the world. That's movies. That's Hollywood.
Well, if the world is in a position to need saving because you have these evil guys, the cabal that wants to enslave 7 million people, shouldn't there be somebody charged with a mission to stop that?
Well, there are people in high-level government who are star beings as humans, and they're doing what they're doing. There are star beings as humans in the pharmaceutical business and preventing certain drugs from reaching the market. There are those people. But again, it's not saving the world. You're just doing your job. You're doing what you came here to do. Now, let's say you were supposed to be at a certain place at a certain time to prevent a certain drug from reaching the market. That drug would cause adverse side effects in society. Now, let's say that these cabal, they approached you, they reprogrammed you, they brainwashed you, and then you became a drug addict, and you didn't go on your mission. You weren't there to stop the drug from reaching the market. The drug reaches the market, and you get a problem like thalidomide.
Mm.
The thalidomide, you know, created these deformed babies. Now,
what you're saying is that there's a whole bunch of what we would think of as ordinary people living ordinary
right.
lives, but their lives have
right.
been arranged so they're at the right place at the right time, if they're not seduced, to do something or one thing or a series of things for a year or two or three or 5 years as part of their whole lifetime experience, and that thing they do makes things better?
Right, it makes it more efficient. The function, the system functions properly, and there's no
corruption. Yeah, but freedom is not properly functioning. Freedom is incredibly messy. Freedom is the messiest possible way to govern human beings you can imagine, unless you look at all the other possibilities, you know, kind of misquoting Churchill. It's like freedom is inherently very, very sticky, messy. It's not clean. It doesn't have sharp lines. It's not efficient. It's how we are free to find out who we are. You're saying the Stellans want more order?
No, they want people to follow their program.
See, but that's a program. That's not freedom. That's a robotic android program. You mean to tell me that we're basically in the Matrix? That's what this all comes down to. They basically said, Paris, we're going to wake you up. You thought you had a nice life, but actually you're living in the Matrix, and you've been programmed to follow a series of programs that you'd have no idea what they're supposed to do, but you're programmed.
As you wake up and increase awareness, you come to the realization that we are living in a
Skype is being very wonky tonight. Say that again. From the beginning, say that again, please. When you wake up...
When you wake up and increase your awareness, you realize that the star beings are not exactly star beings. They have been, their definition has been, is not right. So to redefine them, you redefine them as people living inside of a computer. So they, people living inside of a computer are generally thought of as digital beings.
Okay.
So the star. So they're not star beings. There's no such thing as a star being. Actually, they are digital beings, or you can think of them as holographic beings. Sometimes you can think of them as machines.
Oh, wait a minute. If they're part of a digital simulation, then aren't we part of the same digital simulation? Are you saying that Elon Musk and Neil deGrasse Tyson and Stephen Hawking and a bunch of other guys are now saying this is a simulation? Are you saying that you've been told by these guys that they're right?
Yes.
Okay. So whose simulation is it, and how can we break out of it?
Let's think of a telecom network, right? You are all familiar with a telecom network. A major telecom company builds a network. In that network, there are a number of mobile devices.
Okay.
They connect to the computer. Now, when you are connected, you have a signal, you have a signature, you have a clear communication with the main computer. Now, it's been very common in the last 10 or 15 years that the telecom network, they allocate a portion of the network for another company to set up a virtual network that shares the backbone of the main network, and so they don't have to build a network. They just share a different set of bands, frequency bands, within the main network. So if the original simulation is the main network, the prison we live in is the sub-network that has been created by these other groups, the cabal and these other
You keep using the word cabal. Who is the cabal? Are they simply humans who are oligarchs, richer than God, bored to tears, like to run the world, or are they merely puppets of off-world, and now we're talking about digital off-world, part of the simulation,
right,
to basically be a kind of a subroutine to experiment with what would happen if this goes wrong and that goes wrong, and, you know, we basically create super geniuses that, you know, manhold the entire planet because of their position of superiority, et cetera, et cetera. In other words, is this a game-playing simulation? Again, who's doing the simulation? And us as beings, how are we aware it could be a simulation? How could the computer suddenly have become aware? How could the program suddenly develop comprehension or consciousness?
This is a big topic to talk about. It's very complicated. So the main network, the sub-network within the main network is isolated from the main network. This is the prison system we live in. It's a limited reality, limited information. But it is also corrupt. So the data is corrupt. So things are turned upside down. You know, this is where you get children being injected with formaldehyde, and the mothers are saying that's perfectly normal. This is where you see invasions of countries and violence and war and electing corrupt politicians into the government and people saying that's completely normal. So this is the corruption. The program is corrupt. So we are seeing everything distorted. So the cabal, they are basically these corruptors, right? They disrupt the frequency, because it's like a frequency-based simulation. So they disrupt the frequency, they change the vibration. So if you're a mobile phone in a network, you never have clear reception because somebody's jamming your signal, somebody's creating noise. And so all we're seeing is the noise. All we're seeing is all our information distorted and jammed.
So are you basically saying that reality is kind of like the holodeck on the Enterprise, and we're all holodeck characters, and there are people from outside who are inserted into the program, these so-called star beings reincarnated with their memories hobbled so they can blend in until they're activated, and they're activated in the program to do what? To tell the rest of us it's a program, or to change the program back to where we can escape naturally, or we'll be self-contained and we'll be living perpetually like that interesting program on Star Trek where Moriarty was sent off with his lady friend in the little, you know, cube, digital cube from the holodeck. So he was living a continual program and they never knew they were in a program, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Is that what you're saying reality actually is?
In essence, yes. I am saying that. So because the problem is your awareness. So the star being is really a digital being that takes a human form. The human form, again, so the reality is a synthetic reality. It does, you can look, you can touch it and feel it. It is a synthetic reality that is controlled by a simulation, an operating system.
So there is an artificial again, let me try to get this clear. So are we independent consciousness trapped in this simulation? Or is our consciousness solely in the simulation? In which case, we're solely at the hands of the folks that basically program the the simulation.
It depends on your level of how awake and how aware you are. Because if you're hobbled, and if you still believe in the corrupt program, then you are under the dominion of this cabal and the reality hijackers, essentially the reality hijackers reprogram reality. Now, if you remove the corruption and you remove those blocks in your system and you wake up, then you can see what I'm basically describing. You see the simulation. Now, what's happened is that a simulation is created and is supposed to run a certain period of time. Now, we all incarnate into the simulation to experience, to learn, to grow.
So hang on. This is very important. You're saying that our consciousness is independent in the universe, and we voluntarily enter this digital world, this VR simulation, to basically go through experiences, and that holodeck has been taken over by bad guys who basically want to imprison X number of millions and millions of souls in this simulation, which has nothing really to do with the reality that we came from.
Right. Essentially, yes. They hijacked the reality.
Okay.
Reprogrammed.
So the next question then is, and we got 3 minutes to the bottom of the hour. if your mission is not to basically break this damn program and return us all to sanity, and again, I keep looking at CNN, MSNBC, and Fox, and I'm looking at a program going totally bonkers. If that's the mission, how does it do anybody any favors if they're just a grocer and they're going to set up some food line to know that they're living in a program that really needs to be ended absolutely to begin with, because it should never have existed to begin with?
Well, the simulation... the simulation has failed.
Oh, you think? Look around.
Right. So, in other words, the idea was that people go through life and they gain the insight I'm sharing now. They gain the insight we're living in a simulation. They gain the insight they incarnated into a synthetic body, into a synthetic world. And then they learn their lessons, and then they go on to the next lesson, the next world, right? The next the next reality, the synthetic world. But because it's been hijacked, people aren't learning their lessons. They're not resolving their karma. They're not realizing they're living in a simulation. They don't know they have a synthetic body. So this problem has been ongoing, and it cannot be fixed. So what's happening now, it's been deemed a The simulation has been deemed a failure, and everybody needs to be told we are living in a computer-generated reality, a completely synthetic world. There is no free will.
That is,
and you
so,
came here by choice.
That is so remote. Well, you mean there's no free will in the simulation?
But you came here. When you incarnate, you decide your life, and that's your life. There's no choice. You're living out exactly the life you chose.
Which gets back to the big hang on. Which gets back to the big question: why do you choose the life you're living? What's the payoff? What's the benefit? If it's only a simulation, simulations on Earth in our reality are to prepare you to do something better. You know, astronauts do simulations, naval pilots do simulations, firefighters, anybody who has a complex job has to practice. So what is this matrix a practice for?
It's a school, a spiritual school. Why do you go to school? You go to school to learn whatever you want to learn. You want to learn business, you want to learn philosophy, you want to be an engineer, a doctor, whatever it is you chose.
Okay,
I'll tell you what,
hold it there. We're at the bottom of the hour, 1.5 hour to go. I'll remind everyone about Facebook and Twitter and Enterprise and The Other Side of Midnight when we come back. You are on The Other Side of Midnight, one last half hour to go this morning with my guest this morning, Paris Tosin. And yes, we shall survive. And we shall also return. Don't go away. And I've got all my love to give, and I'll survive. I will survive. I will survive.
seen a storm like this. No.
And we are back on the other side of midnight on this Thursday morning. Pre-dawn on the other side of midnight, and that is Amanda Best in the background with, again, one of my favorite songs. Let's listen to this just for a couple of minutes here.
God damn the drops that hit the ground, the blame and the rain, like yelling at a ghost, like the call that doesn't come, and then cursing the phone, like punching the wall, but I'm the one that bleeds. It's like the nothing to me, and putting it all on you for leaving me this way. It's like blaming the rain.
You know, there are songs that just kind of hit you, and when I first heard that one, and I had Amanda on actually as a guest, you know, a very up-and-coming young songstress, and that song just, it just says something, because there's so many things, Paris, that we can't control in life. If you're telling us there's one more thing, that life itself is a total sham, it's a total hoax, it's a total con, how could guys show up and basically tell you that and then basically say, okay, now go out and be an activist and tell everybody that everything they think they know is wrong?
Big questions. It's not a sham. That's the beauty of it. The beauty of it is that This is all something that has been built for us to experience these things in life. And we have incarnated into this synthetic world specifically to take part of this school, right?
Hang on, Paris. These are conversations, you know, you have to listen. Roddenberry said to me, this is an e-ticket. Gene Roddenberry, a guy who created universes, Star Trek, imprinted the future, developed things that we are now, are so much a part of our reality that we can't imagine ever life without them. Roddenberry said, this is an e-ticket. Now, why is life so boring in reality that we have to put our consciousness into a computer program to get some thrills and, you know, the whole e-ticket experience? Again, what makes this necessary?
Spiritual evolution. There's an innate need in the digital person you are to learn and to grow, to improve, to refine yourself until you can join with you could be one with the computer.
That does sound like an awfully. I mean, there are folks now that are talking about, and I think they're called transhumanists, and they're talking about basically downloading human consciousness into an Intel chip, and that's basically how you have immortality in terms of our current human experience, our 3D reality. You're basically saying that these star beings came and woke you up and said, basically, you're on an Intel chip sitting on somebody's desk, and you put yourself there to go through life, to have experiences, so that you can get to be a better person. Is that basically it?
You can be a more evolved program. Imagine, so in the universe, what's valued is knowledge. Knowledge and awareness. Knowledge, another way of saying knowledge is we say information or we say data. The more data, the more complexity you have to your program, the more knowledge you have. So the program, your program, wants to obtain more data, then it becomes more evolved, it becomes more sentient, and then it joins the...
Okay, these are kind of like standard models. Paris, these are standard models. They've been around for a very, very long time. It's just interesting to me, the first time you were on the show, you talked about the Stellans, the stellar beings. There wasn't a hint of this Matrix-like computer Musk reality, computerized digital simulation. When did these guys tell you this?
They didn't tell me, but I discovered it in about 2011, 2012.
Okay.
And it had to do with my DNA research on the Gnosis system. So my DNA research found out that 1700 years ago, they were talking about microbiology. When you study the Nag Hammadi texts, when you decode them, I re-decoded them using the star knowledge. They're not talking about God, they're talking about DNA, and they're talking about intercellular processes. Now, in about 2010, a man named Craig Venter came out with the synthetic cell, the first synthetic cell, and he said something very interesting. He says, actually, DNA is the software of life.
Mm.
Now, you put those two together, the ancient Gnostics, 1700 years ago, we're studying DNA, microbiology. Venter, only 2010, so we're talking 6 years ago, he comes out and says, there's something known as DNA. It's actually software. Now, we have this DNA inside of each of our cells. If we have software in our cells, what does that make us? And if three people can open a portal in space and time in my apartment, what does that mean? How do we redefine space and time? Because it's very easy to open a portal in a holographic world, because you just have to open a portal in a digital, you have to open up a digital portal. Mm-hmm. You're not ripping through matter, right? You're not ripping apart molecules. You're just opening a portal in a program. So when you start putting all these things together, and the elves coming through from another reality, where are they coming from? They're coming from outside of the simulation. They're saying, hey, Paris, you're living in a simulation. This is a synthetic world. You forgot. Now, can you go out there, learn all these things, and remind everybody not to take life so seriously and not to follow those corrupt people who keep leading you to vaccinating your children and leading into war. You know, stand up a little bit. Stand up and fight. Be hungry for knowledge. Remember your program, and don't accumulate so much bad karma, because when you come out of that simulation, you're going to have to go back because you didn't learn anything in school. You keep failing. And that's what they said. You go to school and you keep failing because you don't understand you're inside of this simulation. So that's my purpose. My purpose is to say, we are synthetic beings with this software DNA in a computer-generated reality, and we came here by choice, but this particular simulation has been hijacked, and we have to isolate those people, and we have to get them out. We have to take back our simulation.
This has kind of gotten into areas tonight that I didn't quite think we were going to get into. So I'm trying to frame questions that will get at the heart of the matter, which is, if we're incorporeal informational beings at some level in some universe, and we have created these digital simulations to learn in, then isn't real life outside the simulation? Why should we care about the simulation at all once we find out it's fake?
It's not fake. Imagine, you know, the Westworld movie was about an Android theme park.
Yeah. And did you happen to see the new TV series?
Yes.
Yeah, HBO is running Westworld. It was a movie with Yul Brynner, a very, very great movie. Now they made it into a TV series, and they ran the first one last week. In the TV series, the way you know the androids, the hosts in the simulation, they have flies crawling on them. Well, there were close-ups of Hillary Clinton during the debate on Sunday showing flies crawling on her. Paris, right. Is this a wake-up call that, in fact, we're in Westworld?
Yeah. Yes.
Why?
If you understand, if you don't understand, it's just a fly.
Yeah, but hang on. In the simulation, why is the fly used as an indicator that this is not a conscious being? This is a simulation. This is an android. This is a simulacrum or simulacron.
Simulacrum? Why is she a simulacrum?
Anyway, back to the big picture. If this is a simulation, then is someone giving us all these clues so we basically get it? Is someone outside, or is it ourselves? Are we ourselves trying to break into this alternate off-the-rails computer program and trying to rescue our own consciousness that's trapped in, as Alex Jones keeps saying, a prison planet scenario?
Well, it's a little bit more involved than that, because there are these reality technicians, what you call star beings. They pull you out of reality, they adjust your programming, and then they send you back, and you wake up the next day a little bit more awake. So they are pulling us out of reality and then reprogramming or fine-tuning our perception, so that when we go back into the simulation, we see a little more, we get involved a little more, we don't listen to Hillary Clinton anymore, we completely disregard her. You completely disregard her as a candidate. Now, when you understand a lot more and you see the fly on Hillary and you see the fly in the West world, and if you follow my work on the person's artificial, the androids on Capitol Hill, you put those together, you realize that you're dealing here with a candidate who is programmable to the nth degree. So you're being assisted in your awareness. So you're not alone in your waking process, but you're not going to be told it, because that would ruin the whole learning process.
Yeah, but when Paris, when the guy showed up and told you, they ruined the whole process. Now you're on the radio talking to 160, 70 countries, ruining for an awful lot of people the whole process. Is this a program designed to destroy the cabal, fake program from within, so that we all ultimately wake up in our own wherever we are? Because this isn't it. This is not reality. This is a fake controlled prison.
Right. It's been hijacked, and you have to wake up.
Okay. So then the next question is, why don't the star beings, the guys who designed the program, designed the computer that we're using for this interesting experience, why don't they step in, just end the program, wake everybody up, and we start over?
But they can't do that because it's against protocol.
Why?
There are protocols.
Yeah, but no. Paris, that's not an answer. That's a bureaucratic response. If you have conscious beings who are trapped, who are enslaved, your moral duty is to wake them up and get them out of prison if they don't deserve to belong there. It's kind of like the Superman movie. And what you're doing? So you're saying that individually
nobody listens to me.
Hey, you're on the radio in 160 countries, okay? Tell you what, hold on. I'm going to try and experiment here. I don't know whether you won't be able to hear, so we can't do it that way. Everybody's showing up on Skype again. I cannot take your call. Let me try this. Let me try a switch here. Darren is trying to call in, so let me go down and try maybe if I can call Darren. Darren, why don't you hang up? I will try to call you. Again, people calling into Skype are not connecting in what's called a group call, which makes it very difficult. So if Darren hangs up, and I will try to connect with him. This is complicated. Sorry, guys. Okay, here we are. So slowly. Oh, there we are. Okay. Sorry about this, folks. You know, this is called a workaround. Hopefully I can do this. Actually, I can't do it that way. I have to do it this way. Isn't this exciting radio, folks, where I'm trying to tell you what I'm doing while I'm doing it? So while I'm doing this, Darren, let's get back to the idea of the program. If the whole idea of the program is to basically get rid of the program, then why don't they just turn off the damn computer?
No, but then you're interfering with the process.
Yeah, but it doesn't make sense. The process. The process is just a mechanical process. We're trapped in a matrix. There's nothing moral. There's nothing, you know, illuminating. There's nothing educational about it. We're just stuck. So why are we not – why can't we get unstuck by simply turning off the switch?
Because you can't do that. You can't crash the system. You can't override the protocols. You have to work within the protocols of the system.
Okay. Darren, are you with us?
I'm here.
Oh, Darren. Okay. Darren. Darren, Paris, Darren. Darren.
Hi, Paris.
Hi, Darren.
Go for it.
Feels like we've been going around and around for the last 15 minutes. I had a specific question about the star beings that visited you. The six aliens. Okay. Did they visit you for a full year? Are they still visiting you?
They've been with me ever since. Yeah.
Are they with you like all the time?
Yes.
Go ahead. Do you see them?
Yeah, they're with me all. They, not normally, but they, I can see them. They do show up at certain times when they want to communicate something. They do show up. Most of the time they just communicate telepathically. Mind-to-mind communication.
And it's always six of them?
There's six, and sometimes they talk over themselves, and they give me a bit of a headache.
I'm telling you,
I get that feeling on the show sometimes.
a headache, okay. Thank you, Darren.
That was the only question I had. It's a great show, though.
Okay.
Great story. Okay, bye.
Okay. Paris, let me go back to something you said earlier. If this is all a simulation, and I know I keep going around and around on this because that seems to be where we're kind of stuck, because if it's a simulation, then what's the point?
What's the point of life?
No, but life is not a simulation. The thing that makes life living for most people is it's for real. For them, it's for real. Let's take the model and put it aside. Most people who are born believe they are born, they live, they die. They have history. They have other relatives. They have, you know, legacies. They have a they have a planetary sense of the nation they belong to, et cetera, et cetera. If they're told all that is fake, I mean, it makes Brookings look like a Sunday school picnic. You cannot tell the planet it's all fake. They will not wake up. They will die.
So now you see the problem. Why didn't the star beings land? Because they would have to tell you what I'm telling you, and it's very difficult. The star being, the UFO disclosure has nothing to do with UFOs. It has to do with the nature of reality. And the nature of reality is a construction. It's a synthetic world that we elected to come into. We entered Westworld by choice.
Mm-hmm.
We came here knowing that it's false. We came here knowing what we would do, and then they wipe the memory, and you live out your dream, like Total Recall. You live out until you have a Total Recall. And then you leave the Disneyland a better person, a happier person. What's happened is that this simulation was hijacked, it was distorted, and it became corrupted, and we are no longer learning. So we feel like we are in prison, that life is unfair, and the wealthier get wealthier, and the poorer get poorer. That was not the way it was designed. So when you wake up and you realize that this is simulation, it gives you more impetus to do what you're supposed to do, to not pay attention to the rhetoric, to not vote for a corrupt politician. You know, when you wake up, you don't vote for a corrupt politician. When you are asleep, you vote for a corrupt, deceptive politician. So
yeah, but wait. Hang on, Paris, hang on. Again, you're laying out two very contradictory frameworks. So on the one hand, you say this is supposed to make you a better person, How does it make you a better person to discover that your reality is a total fake and it basically is a simulation to make you a better person? There's some logic gaps here which are big enough to fly the Enterprise through.
It's not a total fake. It's like a thing. When you go to Disneyland, you know it's fake. You go there to have a good time. Mm-hmm. You know it's fake.
Yeah, but wait a minute. You say you go to Disneyland to have a good time. You don't go to Disneyland to have a whole bunch of terrorists show up and bomb and destroy thousands of people on an afternoon. That would not be a good time. That's what you're saying is the equivalent of what's happened to this simulation. It's been hijacked. We have endless war, endless, you know, greed, perversion, et cetera, et cetera. And people are just supposed to live out their lives in the simulation, knowing that they can't affect it, but basically living good lives without voting for people like Hillary. It makes no sense, Paris.
Imagine you go to Disneyland, and these guys come in there, they hijack it, they seal it off. They lock you in under a dome, a magic dome.
Right.
And after
As you find out that's what's happened, you leave.
Kind of believe.
Hang on. As soon as you find out that's what's happened, you will leave. Anybody finding out this is a simulation, hang on, Paris. Anybody finding out this is a simulation, the sane thing to do is to leave, to get out of it. Not to stay.
You can't leave unless you wake up.
Unless you wake up. Okay, did they give you instructions for how to wake up, how to leave the simulation?
You go through the awakening process. You understand the nature of reality is one of the big things. You increase your perception. You notice that there's deception in the world, that there's corruption, that vaccinating children is not a very good idea.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean it's a digital simulation. It just means things are really, really, really bad, and they need to be fixed. What's your evidence for the simulation? Let's look around now. Let's say there are people out there listening, and they say, wait a minute, this actually might be real. So what should they look for? How do they begin their self-awakening process and ultimately their decision to stay or leave the simulation?
Well, that's a very big question. It's taken me 11 years to get here, Richard.
You got 5 minutes.
I have a simple answer.
Actually, 4.
There's no simple answer. You have to
start.
Once you realize the nature of reality, and then you realize
from your perspective, the awakening is this is a simulation. That's the point people have to reach.
That's your North Star.
Okay.
Your North Star is this is a computer generated reality. That's not you can't attain that right away. That's your end goal, right?
Okay.
Then you start to break it down. You start to look for the inconsistencies, the programming, the corruption, the distortion. Things are turned upside down. You start to see how everything.
Hang on. When you say inconsistencies and distortions, you mean like this whole election?
This whole election.
Okay.
So let's just use this election because there's too many things to talk about. Let's look at Hillary and Trump. Now, we've sort of said Trump was awakened last year or so, and then he's gone through his program, and he's proven to himself, according to his programming, that the system is broken. I can't fix it. I'm going to make my own system. Now I'm free to do it. So he's broken those implants. He's now freed himself of the implant. How did he free himself? By subjecting himself to his mission. You don't just wake up, you have to live it. He went through on television, the media, he got tortured by the media, but he obtained his goal. So he succeeded in that learning. That's what he wanted to learn. I wanted to learn that the establishment is a failure, and he learned it. Now, on the other side, we have Hillary with the fly in her face. That goes back to my androids on Capitol Hill. And there's some blinking in her strange health condition. You know, she is a synthetic.
Well, there's a really bizarre reality. Paris, hang on. I've only got 2 minutes left. The most bizarre part about Hillary is, I've been obviously watching Hillary for decades, right? I've been watching Hillary gain weight, change glasses, change hairstyles and all that. How did she lose 30 pounds the other night? And there's no time to answer because the music at the end of the show has now arisen. Paris, thank you so much. You've given us quite a bit, I think, to think about. I don't know whether it's real or not, but that's what the show is designed to do, to give us things to think about. Tomorrow morning, we're going back in time. Dr. Sam Osmanagic is my guest. We're going to back thousands of years to another part of the simulation. Until then, remember, third star on the left, straight on till morning. Good night, everyone.